This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Kindness. We see it all around us. We see it when someone pays for someone else's coffee or holds the door open for another person. We see it in the smallest of gestures, like a smile or a kind word. But it's different when we turn on the news or social media. Oftentimes, what we hear about, what outlets are pushing, is the opposite of kind. Welcome to the Kindness Matters podcast. Our goal is to give you a place to relax, to revel in stories of people who have received or given kindness, a place to inspire and motivate each and every one of us to practice kindness every day. Hello and welcome to the Kindness Matters podcast. I am your host, Mike Rathbun. God, I love doing that. We are so glad you could join us today. Make sure that you go to the deluxeeditionnetwork.com, and check out their three podcasts of the month this month. First is Bacon is My Podcast, also I Need Some Creep, and finally The Beard Laws. Also, check out the show notes and make sure you check out my deals with Sunday Scaries and the Coffee Bros. Now, let's get into the show. Hey, welcome everybody to the show. I have such a cool guest on for you today. She is a former educator and she has also coached nonprofits. You're a nonprofit coach. And I have it on really good authority that you may be Kirk Cousins' replacement when he walks away here in Minnesota.
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. I'm on. You know, I've broken one bone in my body, and that was playing football in fifth grade. So I think I'm ready.
Oh, well, you've got all the experience you need.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the show, Leslie DePaz.
Thank you. Yep.
Did it right. Cool. And you are currently with Story Orchard Books in North Minneapolis.
Yes.
And we'll have plenty of time to talk about what that does. And it's so cool. It's such a great story. But you come from an education background primarily.
I do. Yes. 18 years.
And did you, now do most teachers teach like a specific age of children?
So it really depends. In the public schools, you have a license that allows you to teach kind of a range. So my license is first grade to sixth grade. And so I can teach all of those grades under that license. Okay. But of course, there's flexibility if need be. And you can ask for a provision or kind of some excuses to that rule if necessary. But in general, the public schools do tend to stick within those license bands. In the private schools, you don't need a license. So you can really teach what suits you best or what the school feels that you would be best at that really fits your needs.
You don't need a license, a teaching license?
No, not
to teach in private schools?
No, not in the state of Minnesota.
Really? So for, I'm trying to think of one, Totino Grace?
Sure. Any of those private schools, you don't legally need a teaching license. There are certain requirements that the school will set out, a four-year degree from a college or a specific maybe focus. If they're teaching personal finance, that might be more specific, then they're going to want something in that. But yeah, it's really up to the schools to define that.
I guess I did not realize that. Huh.
Yeah, and you know, there's pluses and minuses to that. But if you know your content and you know how to relate to people, then that can be a huge bonus. If, you know, you do need to teach specific phonics or some skills that maybe are often taught in a teacher prep program, then that's something that maybe wants to be considered as a prerequisite. Getting people with diverse experiences into our schools can be a really good thing. But when you need a specific teacher theory or experience or background, you know, you really need to look at what are the costs and benefits to kind of all of it.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And you were mentioning phonics. Hooked on phonics worked for me. That was actually after my school. That came, what was that, the 80s?
Yes. 80s, early 90s. Okay. Yep.
I was already out of school.
There you go.
They came up with the best stuff after I left school. And then did you decide you needed a break after from teaching? And is that when you went into coaching nonprofits?
Yeah. So a lot of things happened during, so I taught for 18 years in elementary school, primarily in first and third grade, taught in a Spanish immersion programs for 13 of those 18 years. And it was just the best job ever. I mean, honestly, sure. Sometimes I would joke, I don't know how people spend their days with just adults. Like, kids are so much fun.
It can be exhausting.
And kids are exhausting, that's for sure. But there were so many wonderful things. I mean, the amount of hugs I got and the amount of stories I got to read and the amount of stories I got to hear, especially about teeth, a lot of teeth stories.
Really?
Yes, because teeth are falling out left and right. And
oh, I suppose, yeah.
A lot of just pure humor. Some of my most wonderful memories come from the relationships I built with kids and families and colleagues. Schools are just a wonderful place, but they're also under a lot of stress and pressure. And that pressure comes from a good place. We want kids to be able to read and write and think and be critical thinkers and analyze and all these different pieces. But at some times that is at a detriment to the mental health and well-being of the adults. And sometimes the kids. Sometimes there's too much pressure on those sweet little ones. And so there needs to be balance, but finding that balance is almost impossible. You're dealing with one of the second largest groups of publicly employed people after police officers. And so how are you going to make a system that fits everybody? You're not. How do you make a system that's flexible to meet everyone's needs and strengths? You're not. So you're looking at a system that can be very challenging. And then you're looking at sweet kiddos who learn in just as many different ways as there are kids. There's no way that you can create a curriculum that's going to meet the perfect needs of everyone. And so then you say, oh, well, teachers are trained to differentiate. Teachers are trained to meet the needs of this and that. Of course we are, but there's not the time and there's not the support, especially when you have class sizes of 33 to 35 kids. And
yeah,
so,
I can't.
The school system has its awesomeness, and it also has pieces that need support, and we do need the public support to recognize that. My husband always jokes that everyone thinks they can be a teacher because they went to school. They know what teachers do. But yeah. In reality, you were a kid when you were in school. You didn't see it all.
No.
So there's just so many different pieces to it. But as I now look back, teaching was so wonderful in so many ways. But the last number of years have been challenging for a plethora of reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Teaching through COVID, along with having three kids of my own, my husband is an educator. So that was a time, a big lesson in time management.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And priorities. For sure. And that really showed me that we needed some flexibility for our family to be okay. So we chose me for the one to step away for a bit. So I took a leave, not knowing how many years we would need to kind of make sure that we were on track. And in the meantime, I took a position with a nonprofit in the providing consulting to other nonprofits and fell in love with it. And
oh, wow.
That's kind of what I've been doing alongside with running the nonprofit that I started back in 2017 called Story Orchard.
And that's really what we're here to talk about is Story Orchard.
Yes,
I was just kind of building into it.
Yeah.
So I don't know where to start with here. Story Orchard is what? Go ahead.
Story Orchard is one of my little dreams that has finally kind of come about to full, well, we'll say almost full capacity within this last year. But back in, back in 2014, I changed school districts into a new classroom and realized that my classroom needed a little bump in books. And so I started to collect books for my own classroom and realizing that books are super expensive. And at that point, I didn't have a budget from the school to get new books. And so I started thinking, my goodness, like I'm a seasoned teacher. I have the ability to buy books for kids and they didn't have to be new, garage sales and such.
Sure. Right.
But how do new teachers stock a completely new classroom library if funds aren't there? So I was like, you know what? People are giving away books left and right. I'm going to collect them and make sure that the right books get in the right hands of new teachers. So that's what I started doing. But of course, then life, you know, delays all of your great plans.
Oh, yeah.
I had a couple kids along the way. And my husband said, you know, you need to get these books out of our basement. And I was like, okay, how are we going to do this?
Okay, when you say you were collecting all these books, you were collecting them in your house.
And garage. I mean, of course. So... at that point, I had done quite a bit of research in the importance of literacy in general. And what the research really points to is it's not just kiddos that need strong literacy skill, it's communities. So I had done a lot of research behind community literacy and the impact that that has on not only individual kids, but the mental well-being and mental health and personal success of adults and then communities as a whole.
Wow.
And that ties into personal, like self-reports of personal success, mental well-being, and then also crime. It's tied.
My goodness. Yeah, books affect crime?
Yeah.
Or access to books, I guess we should say, right?
Well, access to books and then, yes, the opportunity to have books and learn from them. Has a direct correlation or is shown to reduce risky behavior.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah. I had no idea that link even existed.
It links through self-efficacy, so the belief that you can do something, mental health, so a strategy to be able to reading can do a number of things. It can be motivating to the fact of, oh, I learned something. Now I want to put this into action, which would take you towards a positive versus a positive path versus having that temptation to do something or engage in a negative behavior. Reading can also reduce stress significantly, especially for anxiety and mental health. It brings you out of reality, gives your mind a reset, and it also provides you with the opportunity to empathize with others, have yourself, your identity, and your experience validated so that you don't feel isolation, which is research-based to show that that decreases depressive states. So access to books and then actually engaging with them does have positive impacts on one's self-perception, future success, blah, 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 which in turn reduces engagement in risky behavior, which then can turn criminal behavior. So there a direct link? If you read, you will not do these behaviors. No, but we know that if you engage with reading and books and others, it has a positive mental health and personal efficacy and all of those pieces, so that sure. It decreases the opportunity or the time to be involved in risky or negative behaviors.
Wow. Yeah, that's I had no idea. So you had talked about, we're going to be right back with more of my conversation with Leslie DePaz from Story Orchard Books after this brief message from another Deluxe Edition podcast.
Welcome to Drink O'Clock, the podcast that's always happy hour. Join us each week as we sit down with interesting guests over a drink and talk about life, work, and everything in between. Whether you're sipping on a cold beer, a glass of wine, or your favorite cocktail, Drink O'Clock is the perfect way to unwind and hear some amazing stories. So tune in to Drink O'Clock every week, anywhere you can find podcasts, and join the conversation. Cheers.
Young teachers and just having access to books to get your students to read.
Yes.
And while we were talking offline, you talked about a term I had never heard before, but it makes sense, and that is a book desert. And I think most of my listeners have heard of the term food desert, which is where you have an inability to get fresh food, fresh vegetables, and that sort of thing. And generally that happens inner city. I know I used to live in South Minneapolis.
Yeah, that. Or rural. Sometimes
and there was no real grocery store there.
Yeah. You know, food deserts happen in a bunch of different places around, you know, our country and the world. It, you know, the circumstances behind it are really situational and environmental in that extent. And we can see the same for book deserts. You know, here where the Story Orchard works, our community is Camden in North Minneapolis. And we are so lucky to have two amazing libraries, which is so fantastic. But that's only one piece to having access. And having access to literacy opportunities and books needs to be ingrained and intertwined into a community. And so here at Story Orchard, we have it kind of in a bunch of different ways. We have our book bike mobile, which is how we started. And when I started to learn about the kind of community literacy needs, we did a GoFundMe and threw up $3,000 to have our goal was $3,000. That's it. $3,000. That's it. That's all we needed.
Wow.
To build a custom built bookmobile. And we had an artist and metal worker from our area create the most amazing bookmobile. And I filled it with books and hopped on it during my summer months off as a teacher. And I went to community events and parks and talk about kindness and joy. If you're ever feeling a little down, find a bookmobile. It is just pure joy. I cannot tell you. I mean, after the kids got over the fact that it wasn't an ice cream bike.
Because it does kind of look like an ice cream bike, I'll be honest.
It does. But you know, if I get them to come over because of that, I'll take it.
Whatever gets them near, right?
But the amount of high schoolers that were looking for books really surprised me. The amount of adults that, I mean, those mystery books, let me tell you, James Patterson, Minnesota author, those books, I could not keep them stocked.
The Notebook?
No, I could not keep his books, the mysteries.
And the Notebook.
I mean, people love them. It was really neat to be able to bike around, pedal around our community and give away free books. We also do partnerships with schools. And then we have our community bookshelves. And those are bookshelves that are in businesses, neighborhood association, park board facilities, and then food shelves. Those are stocked biweekly or when necessary with free books. And that just gives one other touch point for people to have access to books and literacy.
And then, yeah, because the more areas you can create for them to go to get a book, the better off you are, right?
Absolutely. And transportation is something that is a barrier to getting to libraries. And I wish we had better public transportation here in Minnesota. And we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. But it's just not as accessible as I wish. And so having access to books is in different points of your community is really beneficial for all.
Sure. Yeah, I have very fond memories of the bookmobile in the city that I grew up in.
Talking
the 70s, and it was the big old bus one, right?
Yes, yes.
And you would go on in through the front door, and you'd just make your way to the back and check out books. And I love the smell of that, the smell of all those books. It was so cool, and it was summer, so you know you didn't have school.
Yes,
and I think I don't remember the only library I remember from my hometown was downtown, and we were a ways away from that.
Okay.
But the bookmobile was just so cool.
You might have to,
you'd have like 2 or 3 weeks before it would be back again, and I could go through a couple books by then.
Yes, absolutely. How fun.
And then
this past year, in 2021, we opened up our first actual space, a physical space where people could come and get their books.
Another brick and mortar.
Yeah. Even though I've been told bookstores are going away. No, they're not. They're not. People still love them. Another barrier to books is the price. And that's something that is tricky. And that's why libraries are so amazing, because those books are, you can check those out with no barrier to cost. And so looking at the demographics of our neighborhood, I knew that cost could be a barrier to some of our community members, if not a chunk more than just a few. And so we really looked at how we provide free books. So 90% of our books are donations. People want to see books passed on. That's why people write in them. They write an inscription. They write that. You know, it's just really neat. And so 90% of our books are donations. And then we buy 10% of our books for specific requests, specifically around book clubs for neighborhood associations to do, or local book clubs. And then also any specific requests from teachers. If they're like, hey, I'm looking to do a book study, I need 6 copies of this. If we don't have them on hand or we can't get them, then we'll order those new. A little shout out to First Book. They are an organization that provides discounted books from publishers to nonprofits and schools. And they are just an amazing support for book access in general.
Oh, cool. So now Story Orchard Books, the physical location, you have books from preschoolers through adults, right?
Absolutely. Yes. So we carry board books.
It's not just kids.
No. And that's the thing. As much as we talk about literacy, kids need to see adults engaging in literacy, whether it's simply writing your grocery list, seeing that reading and writing is something that is crucial to their lives. And then you get the pushback, of course, oh, well, everything's on the computer. Everything's on my phone now. That's fine. But show kids that you're doing them, show kids that you're working with words, showing that that's just important. Oh, well, they don't need to spell anymore. And I'm not going to push back on that. You're right. Kids don't need to spell much anymore. But
autocorrect.
To that point, we are finding that if kids don't have a good grasp on phonics, if they do want to pursue careers where there are a lot of terms based in phonics or phonetics, medicine, sometimes law, they're going to need that phonics to be able to figure out the pronunciation, and then also the word stem that can help them figure out the meaning of words for those careers that use vocabulary based in that piece. So of course, we can find a push and pull of every side and opinion on everything you want. But there are some research-based pieces there. So yes, our store has books for everyone. We try to hold every genre possible, but it's really based on what is donated. And we have different sections of our space dedicated to those different age groups.
That is so cool. It's just, what a great organization you have there.
Thanks.
Because it is so important. I know after my first child, and everybody would say, if you want your kid to read, you've got to read to them. How do we get our kids? Because I have 3 kids, and they all have varying degrees of likability of reading.
Yes.
How do you get a kid interested in reading? Is there a way to do it? Is that it?
Man, if I had an absolute 1-2-3 path for that, I would be a millionaire. A lot of people have tried. A lot of people have tried. But there's so many different pieces. But the root of it is asking the question, why does one read? Why does a kid read? Why does an adult read? Why does anyone actually read? What purpose is that reading serving? And I think that is kind of the root of it. And so we can look at reading for so many different reasons. First of all, we read first to understand. So we understand for a number of different reasons. Are we reading to learn? And some people really thrive on learning. They read every nonfiction category, from gardening to car mechanics to space to medicine, every history. They read to learn, and that's something that's really motivating to them. Oh, I learned something. I can apply that and take that out into the world. I can teach others. Or simply, I just like learning. So people might read to simply learn. People might read to feel validated. to learn about the lives of others, all of those people like me that embody every emotion of other people in a heartbeat. That would be me. I read mainly to understand people and just sure. love in the stories of lives. And that's really intriguing to people. And they might read to escape. Their life is a certain way and they want to be in a different space. They might read to escape. For sure. people with anxiety, rereading the same thing is really comforting. And that can be something where they reread the same book. They might not realize it, but they're rereading because they know it happens. It's predictable. And that is comforting to their brain, their heart, their body, their soul. And you may read out of necessity for your job. You might have to do a report. You have to do the research. You have to know this. You're reading for a specific purpose. And that sense of accomplishment gets you that kind of fix of what you need. So when we're talking about getting people to read, I think the root of it is, what's the why behind it? Why do they want to read? What's that going to be that pull? So first of all, to get kids to read, there's kind of a couple approaches. One, you can read with them, reading when they're younger to them, or as they get older, reading the same book, but separately. So as your kids get into maybe middle school or high school, I still really encourage adults in kids' lives to read with them, whether that is literally sitting down and reading out loud, or they read to you, or reading the same book, but separately, and then talking sure. about it, kind of like a mini book club. Hey. But that engages people in so many different ways, and it also gets people reading. I do like to push, though, that making independent reading right before bedtime can sometimes, most of the time, not work because kids are exhausted. So reading right before bed for some kids, that is just too much. So you might want to do independent reading time right after they've eaten lunch or right after they've eaten breakfast. Okay, we're doing our 10 minutes of reading. I don't want to. I know. Let's try it. Let's set 1 minute and see how we do. Let's set 2 minutes and see how we do. But sometimes doing it just before bedtime, kids are just too exhausted. And they're like, no, I'm not doing that. But maybe reading to yeah. them is what works at that particular point. But if you have those kidders that are like, I don't like to read. I'm not reading. Why do I have to read? That's when that why piece comes in. So find okay. out what is the interest. Start with, what do they like? Do they like trucks? Great, let's read about trucks. Do they like volcanoes? Let's read about volcanoes. Anything like that, and then maybe dinosaurs? you get into a fictional piece that is based where a volcano happened or whatever that might be. And if you're like, how am I possibly going to find that? Go to your library. Those children librarians are unbelievable. They're really, really, really fantastic. The other thing that I would say is if, you know, the nonfiction route isn't kind of getting them to bite, try about emotions, just like I talked about. Are they going to middle school next year? Find books that are maybe a year above them. So if they're going into fifth grade, find a book that talks about sixth grade, because that's going to talk about an experience that they're going to have. My own middle schooler said to me the other day to her younger siblings, or I guess not to me, to her younger siblings, middle school is not as dramatic as the books make it out to be. I was like, I'm really glad that you're having that experience. That is fantastic. Really? But part of me feels like she was set up to be like, oh, there's going to be a lot of drama, or, oh, this is going to happen. And she's like, nah, didn't really happen. That could be the complete opposite for other kids. Who knows? But kids do tend to be drawn to that next stage in their life, whatever that might be. So getting kids to read something that is one step ahead of where they are can be really motivating for them. And then also if kids tend to be really like sympathetic, or adventurous, finding a book that talks about adventure, or if they, you know, are very creative, they like, building everything with cardboard and adventure, or, they're into the mystery of it all, find books that appeal to that. And I know that sounds like very like, yeah, I knew that kind of advice. Find something that you're interested in. I would also recommend trying something that is the complete opposite of what they're interested in.
Oh,
I took a little breather. And this is advice for adults as well. I took a little breather from reading, and I can't really explain why, but when I got back into it, I was pulled into two genres that I had never read before. One was like those beach reads that you like buy at the grocery store. I had never read one of those in my life. And all of a sudden I was devouring them like they were candy. I don't know what it was, but I was like, this is fantastic. I don't have to think about anything.
How did I not know about this?
Yes. And then the other genre was personal finance. Had never read a single book on personal finance. And I got sucked in, and I have now read four and just loved them. Absolutely loved them.
Like Susie Orman or...
No, I read Millionaire Teacher, which was the first one I read, and that got me started. And then I read Financial Feminist by Tori Dunlap. And then I read, I'm blanking on my third.
That's okay.
It's not a quiz. I'm blanking on my list too.
It's not a test.
Candy Valentino was the author of the third one, though, and I'm blanking on the title. Okay. But anyways, so two genres that I had never dabbled in before and ended up just loving it. So if kids aren't biting on the things you think they're going to bite on, try something the complete opposite. If you have a middle school boy, try a middle school kind of girly book. See what happens. You never know.
Yeah, perfect.
So those are just some kind of thoughts on how to re-engage or to try to get kids to read or love reading. Oh, and some kids are never going to love it. I wish all kids did.
But that's unfortunate.
Yeah, or not. It is what it is.
I know.
They might really enjoy live theater instead. Who knows?
My middle kid, he just never really picked it up. And we tried, you know. Comic books. Here. No, I'm not into comic books. And it's like, well, he was really into like motorcycles and stuff. I don't think we got him a subscription, but we'd bring home like those motocross magazines. No. And it just, it was what it was. And you don't want to try to force a kid to read because that'll have the opposite reaction.
Yeah, that never works.
So, but yeah.
Yes. Just like the pediatrician says about vegetables, just keep offering, give the opportunity, give the chance to explore, give the chance to, whatever.
Yeah. Your organization is just so cool. I am so inspired just reading it and hearing about it. It's Story Orchard Books, and you're in North Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I'll have the link to your website.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And all that other good stuff in there. But thank you for coming up with a few minutes that you could spend talking to me and sharing your amazing... It is. It really is.
Since this is the kindness project, I do have to say, if you're ever looking for a bit of kindness to do, please stop into our space because whenever I'm having a day that I'm like, oh, that wasn't my favorite, I just head over there and sit in that space. And it is just so lovely to be surrounded by people and books and stories and lives and know that I'm not the only one that's ever had a bad day. Also go through your own books at home and see if there are books that you can donate to your local elementary school, to your local library, to your local homeless shelter, food shelf, anyone who might have people that need a little pick up in their lives. And then go out and buy a new book.
Yep. To replace those ones that you give away.
There you go.
Fantastic. Leslie DePaz, thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, and thank you.
And thank you for coming on the show and sharing your amazing organization.
Thank you. Thank you. There's also plenty of opportunities to get involved in our organization on our website. So check out that front page.
If you need a volunteer, volunteers head here.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. We will talk soon.
Wonderful.
Take care. Thanks. Have a great week.
You too. Bye.
So many thanks to Leslie DePaz from Story Orchard Books. And if you don't have time to go to the show notes to check them out. That's storyorchardbooks.org. I learned so much on this episode, and I'm so grateful for Leslie and her time today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned a few things. And thanks for listening. I appreciate it. That'll do it for this episode of the Kindness Matters podcast. Again, check in the show notes for my partnership with SundayScaries.com or TheCoffeeBros.com. You get a discount if you use my name. That'll do it. We're done for the week. We will be back next week, of course. And, you know, until then, be that person who roots for others, who tells a stranger they look amazing, and encourages others to believe in themselves and their dreams. You've been listening to the Kindness Matters podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rathman. Have a fantastic week.